Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York, and for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Well, folks, I'll tell you something. Monday Night Raw was really, really different last night in the sense that usually it builds slowly and sometimes way too slowly to a decent finish. Starts out very slow, steadily gets there until the main event, and you have something halfway decent usually for the main event. I have to tell you, you got to shut this off after the first match, and you didn't miss much. You didn't miss much at all. However, if you tuned in late, wow, you really missed something. Because the three-man tag team, or the three-team tag team match for the tag team titles was probably the best match that Raw has put on, certainly this year, and maybe last year. They allowed Team RK-Bro, obviously the Alpha Academy, and Owens and Rollins to literally have pretty close to a half hour. Pretty close to a half hour. Went through two, maybe three commercial breaks. I think three. And if you missed it, it was spectacular. This goes to illustrate the point that all of us here at WrestleChat Radio have said time and time again when it comes to the WWE. If you give people time to do the match, they can put on a sensational match. You can't ask someone to light the sky on fire in a minute and a half or 2 minutes. They need the time to actually work the match. When you give them the time to work the match, this is what you get. And what you got was really fantastic. Really fantastic. Everybody in this match, and I mean everybody, did a great job. Now, there is one thing that everybody's talking about the most, and it's probably the thing I like the least about the match, was the moonsault that was turned into an RKO by Randy Orton. Now, everybody says, well, that's spectacular, and certainly the timing and the skill it took to do that perfectly, that's impressive. However, in the grand scheme of things, I don't like that move, and I'll tell you why. I don't know why that hurts any worse than just falling from the moonsault. He was 99% down when he hit him with the RK. Well, what the hell's the difference? It almost makes the RKO look fake because, well, what was the difference really at that point? He's falling anyway, and you just put your arms around his neck, and that did what? That doesn't make any difference. The momentum was already there. So I don't really care for that much, especially the way it was. You could do that from like the top rope, and it does seem to make a difference because of the, you catch them so early and it's extra downward momentum, but this one didn't. So it was really more just, oh, wow, look at the timing and the level of, timing involved to do this properly. It didn't really look like a move that would have hurt any more than if he just landed on his face. Aside from that, though, folks, they tore the house down. They tore the house down. I kept saying, well, this match is going to end in a minute because they're going to be up on a commercial break. And then they'd say, well, we'll be right back. And I'm like, wow, they're really letting this go. I would much rather see a Raw like this. I would much rather see a Raw where there's just four or five matches, but they go this long, than I would see 18 matches, but they're a minute long. This was nothing short of a fantastic match. And Team RK-Bro win. Technically, Seth Rollins got the finishing move in, but Seth was dumped out of the ring by Riddle, and Riddle took credit for the pin. Which, of course, the gimmick is that Seth Rollins now does not have an opponent for WrestleMania, and Kevin Owens is left without an opponent for WrestleMania, which we'll talk about later. But this match, in my opinion, Mike, best match on Raw, certainly this year, and probably last year, too.
That's right. And I enjoyed the match, but what I enjoy the most of it, and we've talked about Randy Orton, you know, and how he tends to be lazy when he doesn't like to be doing something. But go back and watch that. To all the people who are listening, go back and watch that promo after the match with RK-Bro and watch what happens as he turns around. I don't know what Riddle said or did, but when he turned around and the camera and the picture and the camera didn't follow him, as he turned, you know what was going on. He was laughing his ass off at something that Riddle either said or did, and it's obvious when you look at him, Randy Orton is having fun, and when a job stops being a job and starts being fun, that's what makes it good.
Yeah, look, there's no question, and Randy Orton said it after the match was over. He said, this is the most fun. He wasn't kidding. He said, this is the most fun I've had in my career. I've had a long career here, and this is the most fun I've had. I believe him. Because he's wrestling at a level now where everything he does is interesting. He's hit a stride now. Well, Randy Orton was getting stagnant. Randy Orton was becoming stale. And a lot of it was just, I'm going through the motions. I know what I'm doing. I'm a quality professional wrestler, but at this stage of my career, I'm just going through the motions and collecting my paycheck. And then this team with Riddle came along, and for whatever reason, it ignited in him a sort of a renewed passion for the business, because he really, you can tell he's having fun. And not only is he having fun, see, this is the thing. Because he's having fun, the audience is having fun. He got a huge pop for the hot tag. This is a guy who's been in the company how long? Usually when you're in a company for that long period of time, your popularity dies down and you're there, you know, same old, same old. We've seen him a lot. It was like a fresh new person. They couldn't wait for Riddle to tag in. He got a huge pop for the tag in. That speaks volumes. These guys have really lit it up, and it goes to show you, from what I hear, Randy Orton called his shot with this. From what I hear, Randy Orton was told he was going to work with Braun Strowman, and he said he didn't want to do it. He wanted to do something with Riddle, and because Randy Orton obviously has some tenure here in the company, and they decided, okay, we'll give this a shot, short term, and everything that I hear about this is very short term. One's going to turn on the other, and we'll have a match, probably at WrestleMania. Then they realized, maybe we have more to this team than just a potential feud in the making. Maybe we actually have a team people care about. Maybe we actually have a team that people are going to follow. And they called off those plans. And I don't think there's any plans in the making. Currently, I have not heard of any plans in the making of separating this team. As a matter of fact, you just gave them back the titles. So this goes to show you, if you listen to some of your workers a little bit more, Todd, sometimes their ideas are actually better than what the writers are coming up with.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the match we saw last night between Riddle, Orton, Owens, Rollins, and Gable and Otis, they took their time in this match. The timing was great. Everything was great in that match.
They had enough time to tell you a story, and everything worked out very well. Very well. And at the end of that match, I said to myself, well, this is what people want to see. Here's the problem. This was the first match. This was the first match. And you then gave people a steady diet of things we don't want to see. That's the problem. It was a mirror image. If this was the last match, everybody goes home saying, wow. And it probably should have been the last. That probably should have been the main event. Because then everybody goes home going, wow, wow, wow. What a great ending. Instead, it's almost like going to a fireworks display and they do the end first. You know? And then the last couple of things are just, well, one little firework here, one little firework there. Thank you for coming. Go home. No, they don't do that. They wait till the end for the big grand finale, right? Well, Raw didn't do that, unfortunately. The next thing we get is Dana Brooke versus Tamina for the 24/7 title. Now, let me say this. I was so happy that it was actually going to take place in a ring and be a real match. Because I've been saying for a long time, this is what I want out of the 24/7 title. I want them to have real matches once in a while. It's fine if you say it can be defended anywhere at any time, but then why can't it be defended normally on your show? If it can be defended on a golf course, how come you can't say I'm challenging you to a match? So I was very happy to see that we were actually going to get a match. And the interactions, once again, and again we've been proven right, Reggie and Dana Brooke, very little chemistry, very little audience reaction, doesn't seem genuine, doesn't seem much interest there. Opposite end of the spectrum, Tamina and Tozawa, fans are getting into this. They're getting into it about 80% because of Tozawa. Because he, and by the way, he speaks a lot better English than I thought he did. 80% Tozawa, 20% Tamina, because Tamina's facial expressions are so good. What's ending up happening here is you're catching an interesting dichotomy. You're catching a guy who's smitten with Tamina, and Tamina's not used to having guys smitten with her, and she's finding it unusual and slightly annoying, but at the same time, slightly flattering, and she's not exactly sure how to handle it. And Tozawa, who is playing the part of a guy who I guess has not had many girls smitten with him, is playing his part perfectly, and it's actually, it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch. Now, here's what's not fun to watch. This train wreck of a match, which basically consisted of Tamina knocking down Dana Brooke, putting her in a Boston Crab, where she stayed until she somehow broke out of it and made the most sloppy cover I've ever seen in my life, which Tamina can't kick out of despite the fact she's twice her size. Terrible. Terrible match. Terrible match. But the ending was still pretty good because, once again, Tozawa says, you didn't win fairly, which I don't know how he thinks that. He obviously, she won fairly. You cheated, and here's the real winner, my love of my life, he says, the love of my life. She looks at him like he's nuts. He wants a hug and a kiss. She wants to leave the ring, and then she changes her mind because the whole crowd is chanting for it. Did you hear the whole crowd chanting for Reggie and Dana Brooke to embrace or kiss? No, you didn't. Told you last week this was going to happen. What did we say last week? We said, if your WWE's not careful, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get people interested in the Reggie Dana Brooke story. Well, by proxy, you're going to end up not making them that interested in that story. You're going to make them interested in Tamina and Tozawa. And that's exactly what has happened. That's exactly what has happened. And I am interested in it. This is the only thing that's made Tamina actually an interesting character since Tamina's been in the WWE. I'm actually interested where they're going to go with this because I think you could potentially have a face situation here. You could turn Tamina face and Tozawa sort of her boyfriend, manager, slash wrestler. I think you could have something here. Mike, they pulled that part of it off perfectly. It was just the match that was terrible.
Right. And here's another thing I'm going to say about this. Much like Randy Orton, Tamina's been around a long time. But much like Randy Orton, Tamina is having fun, and it translates. And that's why, that's another reason why the fans can feel are getting into this thing, because they see that Tamina is having fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, and they can relate to a certain extent. They're much more relatable than Reggie and Dana Brooke. They're much more relatable. They got something halfway decent here. If they play their cards right and they don't overdo it or overkill it or do something dumb, you could actually work this enough to have Tamina and Tozawa be a decent couple and an interesting couple to go forward with. I mean, can you imagine, you know, Tamina saying, hey, for the first time in my life, you know, I was bitter and angry, and a lot of it had to do with, you know, my social life and stuff like that, and then along comes out, and so after that, you know, there's a lot to play with there. If you're a writer, you're salivating at the chance. You know, if I'm a WWE writer and somebody says to me, you want to work this Tozawa-Tamina thing a little bit, I'm like, oh, God, yes. That's exactly what I want, because there's so much material. I can come up with a ton of stuff. Now, if you tell me Dana Brooke and Reggie, that's going to be harder because I don't see the chemistry. It seems very fake and forced. You've got somebody really good to work with in Tozawa in the sense that he's got great facial expression and he speaks the language a hell of a lot better than I thought he did. And he's got great delivery. Great body language. Tamina doesn't need any because the exact part you're giving her is the way she is. Cold, wooden, stiff, emotionless, but starting to break. Starting to break. I mean, that's Mike, that's a writer's dream there if you had that, you know, assignment.
I mean, and think about it this way. Yeah, he's a wrestler, but think about it. It's almost the opposite of Miss Elizabeth, who was a small, you know, pretty manager that didn't wrestle, and Randy Savage was this big, burly, you know, guy. You look at Tozawa's almost a normal-sized guy, you know. Tamina is not a normal-sized woman. Tamina is damn near 200 pounds, if not over, you know?
Right, I'm
and
sure,
so,
yeah.
And she's 6 foot tall. I mean, the dichotomy there is, you look at Tozawa was what, 5'8", 5'9", maybe 5'10",
I don't even think
maybe.
He's that. Yeah, I don't even think he's that. I think he might be 5'6" or 5'7", yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you got this whole dichotomy of small guy, big woman, you know, and you're getting people interested in this thing, and I hope, I mean, remember when they got the people interested in Mandy Rose and Otis,
yes,
and they cut that thing off at the knees.
Yep.
I hope
they don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope they don't do that too, Mike. But I'll tell you this. You're right. It's the syndrome of big woman, small guy that's kind of cute and whatever. But Tamina's also doing her job in the sense that she always looks like I'm just about to start laughing. I'm just about to crack a smile. She's just doing little tiny things to show the facade is breaking, and it's a Tozawa who's breaking that facade of I'm just a, you know, mean wrestling machine. I'm not a woman in the sense of, like, I don't have those feelings and those emotions and the whatever. She's starting to break, and the fans want to see it break, see? So that's where the good part comes in with the writers, is you say, well, don't break just yet. Keep up that facade for a while. The payoff's going to be you're going to break, but let's keep it going for a little while. Now, with Reggie and Dana, you've already blown that. Reggie went and took the title and then said, oh, maybe it was the wrong thing to do, and now he thinks he's got a chance with her, so the whole motivation is wrong. That's why people aren't buying into it. This motivation is pure. Win or lose, he's with her. She's breaking and starting to realize maybe there's more important things than me being a mean, hard-ass, whatever. That's why it's working. Because there's more there. Now, the match was terrible. The match was absolutely a horror show. But at least it was a match, and it wasn't somebody running around on a golf course. We got NXT champion Bron Breakker and Tommaso Ciampa versus the Dirty Dogs. It wasn't that this was a bad match, because it wasn't a bad match. The problem with this match, as far as I can see, is if tonight you're going to have Dolph Ziggler and Tommaso Ciampa and Bron Breakker compete in a three-way dance for that NXT title, why the hell does Dolph Ziggler lose this match? You got Bobby Roode right there. He's not in the match. So why couldn't Bobby Roode have lost the match? So that then we say, well, Dolph Ziggler hasn't been pinned. Then when Dolph Ziggler takes the mic and says, well, you may have gotten lucky tonight, but you're dealing with me one-on-one tomorrow. Well, not one-on-one. You're dealing with me and Tommaso Ciampa tomorrow, and when you guys go at each other, I'm going to be there to pick the pieces. You've just been pinned. You've just been pinned. One of the main guys in your match tonight has just been pinned by one of the other guys in the match when you have a perfectly good Bobby Roode sitting out there who's not in the match and could have been pinned. Todd, I don't understand that booking. It made my head spin.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing with Tommaso Ciampa and having Bobby Roode in this is just making my head spin as well. Like, it's like, come on now. It's like clueless having them involved.
Why would you, Mike, have Dolph Ziggler pinned when he's a part of the match tonight as opposed to Bobby Roode? I don't get that.
I don't get it either. I really don't. And that's again, we've talked about this before. WWE makes questionable, even illogical decisions on different things. And it's been doing that for a while now. I mean, like you said, if you've got a guy in Roode that not in the match, has nothing to do with it, other than the fact that he's tag teaming right now with Dolph Ziggler, you know, you have a guy in Roode that, you know, Roode should have taken that pinfall.
There's no question. I don't understand that booking. It's the most illogical thing I think I've ever seen. Now, I think they hoped that Bron Breakker was going to get a bigger problem with Bron Breakker that I see. And he's a little green still. And he needs some. I think he's going to work out just fine. I think he will be a major player in the WWE at some point. The problem I see is that in NXT, he is the powerhouse. He is their Brock Lesnar, you know. He really is a powerful dude. But in the WWE, he's not that big. He's not that big. And if you're going to make him, he's the most powerful guy, well, what's going to happen when he steps in the ring with guys who's way bigger than him? You know, so for him to do that roar like he's Braun Strowman, fans weren't buying into that so much because he's, you know, they're used to a guy like the size of Almos or Braun Strowman or Brock Lesnar where you're like, Jesus, okay, that I believe. He's going to need to work a little more into that. You know, I'm sure he will, and I'm sure they'll tell him. But right now, he can't be like, I'm the powerhouse of the Federation, because clearly, in WWE at least, he wouldn't be. Okay match, though. Okay match. It'll be interesting what happens tonight, I suppose. We then get to Omos and Apollo Crews, which, again, I shake my head. I don't know. Is Omos a heel? If he's a heel, which he clearly is, because he's saying, oh, nobody can touch me, and I'll run through this whole Federation, and nobody stands a chance against me, and then we're supposed to root for who? Apollo Crews? And Commander Aziz? Why would we root for them? They're heels. Again, this is mind-boggling. I don't get it. I guess you looked around and said, well, is there anybody else big? Yeah, well, we got that Commander Aziz. Okay, well, we'll tease a match between them. I don't want to see it. The reason I don't want to see it is I don't know how it's going to help either one. Because nobody likes Omos. They want to boo him. And nobody likes Commander Aziz. They want to boo him. So now what? You want to talk about anticlimactic. You gotta get a guy coming through that curtain that the fans really want to see succeed, even if they're a small guy, so that you can root for him. You know, you can do the old Jack the Giant Killer thing. Can he succeed? Can he run almost down or whatever if you don't have somebody big enough? It's not going to be Commander Aziz. Nobody wants to see that match. And then even if you did, even if you said, well, we're going to make them want to see the match, we're going to do something by which we're going to make them want to see the match, you certainly didn't do it last night because you made it look like he was scared to death. Aziz is a bad guy, and he's scared to death. Why are we rooting for him? And if Almost is the bad guy, and he thinks he's better than everybody else, why are we rooting for him? There's nobody to root for. I hope this isn't what you got planned for WrestleMania, because if you think this is a WrestleMania match, you've lost your mind. Well, you've already lost your mind. There are matches that are not WrestleMania matches, obviously. Mike, I don't know what they were doing with this one, but I don't want to see Aziz versus Almost.
You know what? I thought I did wanted to see it at one point. And here's something else to think about. They tried with what's his name to have him kind of be a power guy against Almost, which isn't going to work. Where he should have been the guy, what should have happened is he should have been the guy. He's a fantastic athlete, not much in the charisma, but he's a fantastic athlete, speed, power, and all that stuff. He should have been should have been the guy that's going to, he's going to lose the match. Okay, I get that. But I'm going to run him, you know. That's how this match should have been written.
Yeah, and look, you could have had Almost versus Aziz. Way back when Almost and AJ Styles were always supposed to be the heels, but Almost was, you know, not really heelish. Not really that heelish. And if you wanted Almost to take on Aziz back then, I think people would have rooted for Almost and said that's cool, but not now. Now you've clearly made Almost the heel. And Aziz is not popular, so I don't know exactly what you're going for here. I don't know what you're going for. To me, Todd, that's not going to work, and that's not good enough.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was terribly booked. It was booked terribly. You know, they should have done this with they had AJ Styles a lot. Would have been better if he was still aligned with Almost, but. It was just...
Yeah, there are ways you could have done the match and it would have worked, but this ain't one. Then we get, I guess maybe we skipped it, but in between this, I guess we get The Miz coming out for a Miz TV, and this is his hometown, so he gets a huge ovation, and he acknowledges it, which I thought this was really good so far. He's saying, well, you people understand what's going on. You understand me. He's playing up the hometown hero thing. He introduces Logan Paul, who's also from Ohio, so he's playing the hometown hero thing. And then for some bizarre reason, Jerry Lawler comes out. And I love Jerry Lawler, but I don't know why he's out there. Maybe he lives in Ohio. I don't know. But the bottom line of the situation is he's like the king of Memphis. So, I mean, he's associated with Memphis, Tennessee, not Ohio. I know he's a big Cleveland Browns fan when they were playing there or whatever, but I don't know what the hell's going on or why he's even there. But basically, he's just there to say, wouldn't it be nice if one of these days WrestleMania was held right here in Ohio? To which Logan Paul says, yeah, that would be awesome. And then The Miz says, no, that would be stupid. And kind of turns on his hometown and says, nobody would. This is not a WrestleMania town, and kind of turns on the town to get the heat. I understand he's trying to get the heat, but then why are you making Logan Paul act like he don't agree with you? Isn't he supposed to be the bad guy too in this WrestleMania match? And why is Jerry Lawler there at all? It's not Memphis. I just don't get any of this. I have no idea why this spot existed, Mike. It just seemed like a waste of time to me.
Right. It would have made more sense if Ziggler was there, because he's from Cleveland as well.
Yep.
You know, so, yeah. And, I mean, you know, he could have been the one that turns on, Ziggler could have been the one that turns on the fan. Because right now, if you look at it, he's getting, The Miz is sort of getting face reaction, but it's obvious to me that he's kind of in that gray area of, am I on a face or a heel? I could go either way, you know, that type of stuff, you know?
Well, I would have understood this more if they introduced Jerry Lawler first, who said, you know, I love Ohio, and I guess he lives here now, or wherever he lives. Or I lived here at one time, so I wanted to come back here, and I'm going to introduce two hometown boys. That would have made sense if he had, like, a King's Tour. And then The Miz says what he says. I don't understand why The Miz was out. The whole thing, it was just bizarre. I don't know what the hell they were going for, but whatever they were going for, it didn't work. I can tell you that. We then get this big special announcement that Carmella and Zelina, Queen Zelina, who are the tag team champions, are going to take on Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan, and if Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan win, they're going to be added to the Women's Tag Team Championship match at WrestleMania. My head exploded. Did you not just take Nikki A.S.H. away from Rhea Ripley because you wanted Rhea Ripley to be a solo worker, and Rhea Ripley wanted to be a solo worker? Now you're going to hook her up with Liv Morgan because you got nothing else for them at WrestleMania. So you said, how can we squeeze as many people into this match as we can? That's all this is. How can we squeeze as many people into this match as we can so everybody's got something to do for WrestleMania? Because we ain't got no plans for nobody. Because we've decided we're not going to make any plans for anybody. We're not going to build up any feuds. We're not going to build up any people except for Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, and that's about it. And maybe Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair. That's about it. Congratulations. So the minute they announced it, I said, well, obviously Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan are winning. They're obviously winning. But how is this using Rhea Ripley the right way? You just took her away from Nikki A.S.H. Well, what's the point of that then? And then you have this bizarre, and I mean absolutely bizarre, situation where Carmella just goes out and starts talking to her husband or on commentary instead of paying attention to the match. I'll tell you. Very seldom do I say I hated and absolutely hated a spot. I hated this whole thing. It made Carmella look stupid. It made Corey Graves look stupid. It made Zelina Vega look stupid. It made Rhea Ripley look stupid. And it made Liv Morgan look stupid. And it made the fans look stupid, too. Or at least it made you think that the fans were stupid. Oh, we're not supposed to. They're not going to win. How could they possibly win against this tag team? Well, I don't know. Number one, they're obviously not even into defending the belts. They're not on the same page at all. And for what reason? Because she doesn't see her husband enough? I'll tell you. Whoever wrote this. And you can see Rhea Ripley doesn't want to be in a tag team. The thing about Rhea Ripley is this. You have to use her right. I've come to this conclusion about Rhea Ripley. She is not the most talented person on the roster. She's just not. She's a little bit clumsy. She's a little bit awkward. She's not all that charismatic. But the one thing she has is she's imposing looking. She looks mean and she looks tough. So if you don't let her be that, if you don't show her tearing through people, solo, then you're not using her right. And when she's in the tag team with you know, one of these, you know, what do you want to call them? One of the pretty, you know, delicate Liv Morgan who's, oh, I'm so pretty and I'm so there. Well, then I don't know. She doesn't fit in the tag team, number one. And number two, she's selling to Zelina Vega like Zelina Vega is Brock Lesnar, and I'm saying, okay, well, then I don't know. If you've taken everything away from Rhea Ripley that makes her special, her size, her appearance, her demeanor, and you're asking her to be something she isn't and that her character isn't, and then that, and then when she doesn't get over, you say, oh, well, it's not working. Yeah, it's not working because you're not using her the right way. She should be tearing the heads off people. You don't want her to be a heel? Okay, fine. Make her be a face, but make her be a face who's like a really tough, mean face. I don't understand why she's in a tag team with Morgan. When I saw this.
Yeah, especially you look at her look. She looks like she should have been in the Riot Squad. That's what she looks like. She looks like a punk type, kind of headbanger type, you know, person, right? You know, she doesn't.
Yeah,
have that
but
pretty,
at the same time, she's big. She's like a China. You know, China was fighting men. She's bigger than China.
And that's the thing. I mean, think about it. If they put Alexa Bliss with the other one.
Liv Morgan,
you know,
yeah.
Liv Morgan, you say, okay, I get it. Okay.
Yep.
The prince, the goddess and this person. They good looking people, hot, you know, all this stuff. Smallish type people. Yeah. I get that. You know. You don't if you put Tamina. You get that, you know. If you put
right.
The other one with Tamina, you get that. Big, strong, you know, people, you get that because they're basically the same person, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but you know what? Even if you wanted to say she was like for instance, when Tamina was with Sasha Banks, she was like Sasha Banks' bodyguard. So it was like Shawn Michaels Diesel. I get that. That works. Partners, we're friends and hanging out, and all Rhea Ripley does is smile, and I'm happy, and, oh, yay, we won. That's not Rhea Ripley's character. Rhea Ripley should have that permanent scowl. Now, when we're talking about the Riot Squad, what made the Riot Squad cool is you had Ruby Riott, who was the punk rocker, you know, mean, nasty, down and dirty punk rocker. You then had, like, this farm girl sort of brawling girl in Sarah Logan. And then you had the psychopathic but pretty to look at Liv Morgan, who may have been more psychopathic than both of them. She was just really good looking. So it kind of worked. This does not work. I'm sorry. It does not work. Rhea Ripley does not belong in a tag team, period. End of conversation. Rhea Ripley belongs being this era's China, tearing people's heads off on her way to facing somebody big for the title. That's it. That's exactly what it is. And if you're going to use her in tag teams, for God's sake, at least put her in there with someone who's just as big and mean. Or if you're going to use her as a bodyguard, fine. If she's Liv Morgan's bodyguard, fine. You want to flip Liv Morgan heel and say Rhea Ripley's my bodyguard and Rhea Ripley does nothing but scowl and yell and beat people's asses, fine. But when they're girlfriends and they're high-fiving and everybody's happy and smiling, that's not Rhea Ripley. Doesn't work, Todd. It's a disaster. Just a disaster.
I absolutely agree, like you said, about Rhea Ripley. Like you said, she don't belong in a tag team. I rate up her as a solo competitor as well.
Yeah, I mean, then that's what she wanted, so I don't know, man. You know what this is called? This is called, let's build a temporary team so we can get both you people into WrestleMania because we got nothing for either of you. That's it. That's exactly what this is. That's exactly what this is. You wait and see if there isn't RK-Bro is going to defend their title at WrestleMania against more than one person. You wait and see. I bet you that's going to happen. They're going to say, well, the Street Profits do deserve it, but of course Alpha Academy, you know, they get the automatic rematch. So how are we going to work this? And they're going to say, oh, we're going to put them all together because this is the deal. They want as many people in WrestleMania as possible, and they've set nothing up. So now it's a scramble to just, I'll add you and add you and add you and add you. No, no thought. There's no thought into any of this. Why would we bother thinking or setting up a feud? It's terrible. It's lazy. We then find out that Finn Balor is going to take on Austin Theory. Okay, well, this sounds like it could be a good main event, except since Austin Theory is facing Pat McAfee at WrestleMania, I can't imagine you want Austin Theory to lose. And since Finn Balor is the champion, I'm sure you're setting him up for Damian Priest at WrestleMania. I'm pretty sure you don't want him to lose. So I figured out pretty early we're going to get a DQ victory here. And we're going to get Damian Priest showing up. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. I don't know what to tell you. I like Austin Theory. I think Austin Theory is truly someone who's going to be a superstar in the WWE. I really do. I think he's got everything that he needs to be a superstar in the WWE. I do not think Damian Priest does, and I do not think Finn Balor does. And I know a lot of people love Finn Balor, but, he is devoid of charisma. Except when he plays the demon, and even then, it's only the entrance. And Damian Priest, I thought, well, he'll be much, much better as a heel. He hasn't shown it yet. He doesn't even seem believable as a heel. So I don't know, man. What can I tell you? I don't think this was much of a main event, Mike. It was pretty predictable and not exactly exciting.
Yeah, it was very predictable. And the thing is I'm starting to see things and hear rumors that Finn Balor is not long for the WWE in terms of working there. So if they're thinking about cutting him or he's unhappy and he doesn't think he's being used right, which he probably is right about that. He's probably not being used right. And he's unhappy, Now, what have we always said? The grass is not always greener. But in terms of Finn Balor, it may very well be greener in another place. Because if he feels like they're not using him right, and I can see, and you can see, and Todd can see that, and even Tom can see that they're not using him right, then. What are we, and we're agreeing with him,
I agree with, he's not being used right. Now, you can say, well, he's champion. How can he not be being used right? He's the champion. Because just handing somebody a belt because they're not satisfied with their status isn't the answer. That's not the answer. The answer is find something he can do that makes the audience go, oh, I'm interested in this now. You know what this is? Find himself a couple of big guys, turn him heel, make him the leader of a little thing like the Bullet Club type thing, where you obviously know he's tough, and you obviously know he can handle himself if need be, but he doesn't really sweat the big guys because he's got backup. So when things get a little too hairy for him, he lets those guys take care of it. And eventually, of course, it's going to come down to he's going to have to fight him one-on-one at some point. That would be Finn Balor's strength, because right now what we're seeing is not it. He doesn't get a lot of crowd sympathy because he mostly always wins. So it's not like you say, oh, well, he's the underdog. He's not the underdog going into Damian Priest match. He wasn't the underdog going into the Austin Theory match. So how in the world are we he's not somebody you really want to root for all that much. So you may as well turn him heel, make him a faction leader, and let's get on with this if you want to use him the right way. Speaking of disaster, we should mention this. Becky Lynch is legit hurt. Becky Lynch is legit hurt. She's not going to miss WrestleMania. But I saw the video of her the night before, Sunday night. I think it was Sunday night, maybe Saturday night. She fought Bianca Belair, and Bianca Belair punched her directly in the throat. And I guess it ruptured her larynx. You could clearly see her clutch her throat, and Bianca Belair instantly went for the finish. And she's in the hospital. She went to the hospital. They had pictures of her with an oxygen tube in her nose. But they're saying, well, it was just a ruptured larynx, a couple of weeks, and she'll be fine. So that's well before WrestleMania. But, man, Becky Lynch is very unlucky when it comes to being punched in places she ain't supposed to be punched. And as much as I really like Bianca Belair, and I understand it's absolutely 1,000% an accident, you can't punch somebody. You could have literally crushed their larynx, and then they would die in the ring. So you got to have a word with Bianca Belair at this point. You can't punch somebody dead in the throat. Now, to her credit, she probably didn't punch her very hard. She probably pulled the punch. So that's why her larynx is only just bruised. Because if she'd have just dead off decked her in the throat, then probably would have crushed her larynx. But nonetheless, you got to be more careful than that. You cannot punch someone in the throat. I'm sorry. I may not have been wrestling as long or wrestled as long as Bianca Belair, but I never, ever, 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 ever punched anyone in the throat. And I threw a hell of a lot of punches, and none of them ever went and landed in somebody's throat. You can't do it. I'm sorry. So as much as I know it's an accident, I know that it's, you know, she probably feels horrible, you got to calm down. And you got to make sure you know where that punch is landing before you throw it. And let's not get too wild and carried away, and you end up hurting somebody really, really, really bad or worse. So, you know, she dodged a bullet there, Mike. She's going to be okay, but, yeah, a fractured larynx doesn't sound like it's much fun.
Right, and look, maybe this will, you know, I'm not saying that her having a stronger neck would help, but I still, you know, And this isn't what happened, what continued to happen with Nia Jax, where it seemed like every week she was injuring people. Even the whole thing with her punching, punching Becky Lynch in the face. You know, this isn't. She's not. But Bianca Belair is not known for being a reckless worker. You know?
No, not at all. But nonetheless, even if she's not, I understand, you know, I don't expect her to be fined or suspended or people to call her unsafe. I do expect that somebody says to her, when you're throwing these punches, you got to make sure you know where they're landing. You can't, this can't happen again. You can't punch somebody in the throat. It's simple as that. I'm sorry. I know it's an accident. I'm sure Becky Lynch doesn't hold any grudge. Nonetheless, you can't do it. So, I mean, if I owned the Federation and I was responsible, I'd tell her exactly that. I'd tell her I 1,000% understand you didn't do that on purpose. But that's the same thing as saying I didn't have a car accident on purpose. It doesn't mean the person's any less, injured. You got to pay attention, and you got to make sure you know where every single one of you slow down if that's what it's going to be or whatever it has to be, but you've got to make sure that you don't punch somebody in the throat. There's two areas of the body you got to make pretty sure you don't hit somebody, you know, and the throat's one of them. So anyway, I'm glad she's okay. She'll be back. Everything's fine, but still, we get to the Edge segment, and I don't know. It starts with his music, and then there's this weird lighting that's trying to make him look like he's the Undertaker or something, and he just basically comes out and says blah, 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 which is the same thing he said last week. It's not impressive. I'm a lot less interested in this match than I was, and that's unfortunate. A lot less interested. I did this whole thing was not necessary. You had the right components. You had Edge, who clearly could say, I don't know how many WrestleMania matches I have left in me, but I'm glad it's AJ Styles if this is my last one, and I'm going to go out with my hand raised, having said I beat one of the best in the business. And AJ Styles saying, I've never really had my big, huge WrestleMania moment. This is going to be it. This is the one I wanted. And I don't want to be the guy that spoils your final match, but I was the guy who, you know, was in the last match with The Undertaker, and I didn't come out on top. I'm going to come out on top on this one. And we have a very interesting dichotomy. They don't have to hate each other. They could respect the hell out of each other and have a great match. I don't know why you had to do all this. It was absolutely overkill. It was absolutely not necessary. And you've taken the enjoyment away from this match because we already know Edge is losing. So unfortunately, I just think this was hype and hyperbole, and I didn't like it at all. Todd, what do you think about the Edge spot?
Oh, like you said, he basically said the same thing last week. You know, this didn't make any sense. He came out with his music, then with no music, like back in the day, when you didn't have entrance themes, no pyro, no
right.
Nothing. It reminds me of that.
Yeah, and the weird lighting. Well, you know, Mike, was all this necessary? You had two really good athletes that was going to fight at WrestleMania for the honor of beating each other. That was not enough.
No, I guess not. I mean, look, his entrance kind of reminded me of what originally the NWA Power was. You know, we used to, originally NWA Power, you know, they used to just come out and get in the ring and wrestle. You know, no music, no pyro, no nothing. You know, that's what that reminded me of, and that's sad. And you're right. We did not need Edge to turn, well, let's call it pseudo heel. We didn't need that.
No, we didn't. And, you know, it's the same excuse he used with Daniel Bryan as well. I wanted to light a fire under you, so I did it. Oh, whatever. Not interested now, unfortunately. I mean, I'm still somewhat interested in the match because it'll be a good match. But I'm not interested in the story behind the match, which that's unfortunate. We then get Kevin Owens with his big announcement. And even this did not go well. And I'll tell you why it didn't go well. Kevin Owens comes out and says, I'm not going to WrestleMania unless I do something rash. So I've come up with this. I want to challenge somebody who represents Texas. Yeah, I could challenge JBL, but nobody wants to see that loudmouth. Okay, that's fine. I could challenge Booker T, and he said a bunch of bad things about me, but he doesn't represent Texas since he spent all of his time in the tag team that claimed they were from Harlem. Fine. But then you get to Shawn Michaels and you say, well, he's a legend and he represents Texas and everything, but I don't want to fight him. Well, I don't know. Wait a minute. You should have just not included him then. You don't have a good reason. You're not fighting him. You have no reason at all, as a matter of fact. Then you come to Stone Cold Steve Austin. And you're not even challenging him to a match. You're just challenging him to come on your show as a guest. To which Corey Graves says, it's been 19 years. It's been 19 years since what? Since his last match. But he didn't challenge him to a match. He challenged him to come on television. Austin's been on television in the last couple of years. Nobody said they're going to have a match. I don't know what Corey Graves is babbling about. 19 years since Steve Austin stepped in the ring. That's not true. For a match, it's true, but he didn't challenge him to a match, and it's not going to be a match. Now I know what's going to happen. Him and Kevin Owens are going to trade jabs back and forth, and eventually Kevin Owens is going to try to give him the stunner, and he's going to reverse it and stun Kevin Owens and leave him laying in the ring and do the whole hell yeah and get up on the thing and crash some beers together, and that's it, and that's what it's going to be, Mike, and that's highly, highly disappointing.
Yeah, it is highly disappointing. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, we thought at one point, you know, oh, he's building a ring in his house. He's going to get back in the ring, right? You know, and all that stuff. Yeah, it's highly disappointing, Marcus.
It bothers me. Now, maybe it'll turn into a match. Maybe the WWE somehow, some way, will still turn this into a match. If they do, it's going to be better than this. See, that's the thing. If you tell me, well, Steve Austin's going to show up to be a guest on the KO show, well, we know what's going to happen. KO's going to end up stunned, and Steve Austin's going to end up drinking beers on the turnbuckle. Big deal. Now, if you tell me Steve Austin's actually going to have a match, and they're going to work 8 minutes or 7 minutes, okay, well, then now I'm in. Now I'm interested. Now I'll watch. I still know that Steve Austin's winning, but to see him work again, that would be, okay. This is not okay. And I don't know why Corey Graves is saying 19 years since he's been. It's not true. God, it was just a train wreck. After the first match, this show was a train wreck. If you take that first match out of Monday Night Raw, this Monday Night Raw is a D-minus at best. But that first match was absolutely fantastic. And it was there. And that's an A-plus match. In anybody's language, that's an A-plus match. So if you take an A-plus and a D-minus and you put them together, I guess I'm going to give this a flat-out C. But I'll tell you this, Todd, it really doesn't deserve it.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it doesn't deserve it, but... Like you said, I'm going to go kind as you. So I'm going to give it a flat C as well.
Yeah, it's a shame because, man, after that first match, I said to myself, Mike, we're on our way to an A-plus show. For the first time in a really, really long time, it's going to be hard to ruin this show. If you started out this good, I don't know how you could really ruin it. Well, WWE said hold my beer, and they sure as hell did, so I can't give it no better than a C. What about you?
You know what? I know I'm not supposed to do this, and I've said this before, but compare this to what we saw just the night before with AEW. With all the stuff that happened in that show with AEW, and that pay-per-view with AEW, and compare that to this, I can't give it more than a C-.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Now, listen, that AEW pay-per-view was very good. Now, it was somewhat predictable. We said exactly what was going to happen with Wardlow happened. We knew CM Punk wasn't losing two in a row, and we knew that Wardlow was going to be the cause of it. We get it. But, you see, even though it was predictable, it left you with a bunch of stories to tell. So predictable is not always the end-all, be-all. It's only if that's the finish. This isn't the finish. This is the beginning. Now Wardlow's got the chance at the title. Is MJF going to have some kind of try to revenge on him? What's next for CM Punk? There's stories to be told there. There's stories to be told about a lot of the stuff that happened with Daniel Bryan and Moxley, Regal showing up. So, yeah, I mean, was it better? Of course it was better. Now, you know, we're comparing a pay-per-view to a TV show, I understand. But at the end of the day, see, the first match was just as good. The first match was a fantastic match. You know, it wasn't full of blood and gimmicks or anything, but that was just as good a match as anything AEW put on. But then you went and you just had a horror show of about 2 hours and a half. And I mean a horror show. AEW doesn't do that. Even when they have, that you're like, that's not too good, it's still not it's not a complete horror show. I guess that's just the difference, Mike. It's, you know, because they, you know what it is, though, Mike? It's because they've developed the characters, so even the ones that are minor, you care about a little bit at least. It's not like there's nobody there that you're just like, I just don't care at all.
Right, and think about this. You know, you look at, for instance, let's look at the Jurassic Express. There's obviously... You care more for one than the other one. Yeah, Christian's kind of their manager, whatever. But you care for more one than the other, and that one is Jungle Boy. And apparently Jungle Boy has gotten a little bit thicker. He's gained 10 to 15 pounds, and he looked bigger and all that stuff. But you care more for Jungle Boy, and is there any reason why that at some point they're going to split that team up and Jungle Boy is going to go on a run? Because Jungle Boy gain a little more muscle, but he had the charisma about him, you know. So
yeah, now look, to be fair, let's talk a little bit about the one thing they did wrong, and I think Mike will agree with me on this. If I would, and I think this was an A pay-per-view, by the way. I don't think it was A+, but I'll give it an A. And the reason I give it an A and not an A+, I understand you may not have signed Eric Redbeard full-time, but you made him. You know, he came in with a flurry, and he's going to be the guy that takes the fall? Why the hell is he the guy that takes the fall? You just sort of, like, introduced him and killed him in the same breath. That was the one thing about this pay-per-view, Mike, that I was totally in disagreement with.
Right. I wouldn't have had him take the fall. Now, you know, you don't want, I guess they didn't want Pac or what's his name to take the fall. And I don't know what happened to the other guy that's in the death triangle. I don't know what happened to him. I mean, I guess he's hurt, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, you wouldn't want this guy to take the foul. This guy, and this is another one of these guys that, you know, he could do a lot of the same stuff that little smaller people can do, but they choose not to let him do it because it would show these other people up. If he at 300 pounds is doing punches and all this stuff, you know, then it's not going to look impressive when, say, an Adam Cole doesn't. And by the way, take a look at Adam Cole's body. He looks a little bit bigger and he looks more defined. But again, Eric Redbeard. I mean, they even mentioned about him and Brody Lee being in a tag team. And when they talked about that, I'm saying, oh boy, if they keep Eric Redbeard around, is there any doubt where he's going to end up?
Right. Yeah. And again, I don't think you introduce the guy with so much fanfare and then have him be the guy who takes the fall. I just don't. I would have rather seen Pac take the fall. He could withstand the fall. He's lost before, he's won before, we get it. Eric Redbeard's big charge is I lost for my team. I didn't like that. Aside from that, though, extremely good pay-per-view. Extremely good pay-per-view. And they didn't harm MJF all that much because his trust or his reliance upon Wardlow was really what cost him the match more than his skill not being up to CM Punk. So I thought it was fine. I thought the pay-per-view was fine. That was my one big thing that I was like, that's a booking mistake. By the way, we should announce that Tony Khan, whether he's telling the truth or not, says he will be the booker for Ring of Honor. So he's trying to dispel any rumors that Cody Rhodes is going over there to be a booker or whatever. He's saying it's not true. He's going to be the booker. I don't know. I don't know whether you're being swerved or whether you're not being swerved. Anyway, folks, it was an interesting Monday. We'll see what ends up happening, and we'll see you on Friday with the weekly wrap-up.
You're listening.